So, Professor Weber, it's a great pleasure. And it's very difficult to introduce you because you seem to be interested in everything, translating French philosophers into German, being yourself a philosopher, a psychoanalyst, just wrote an interesting paper on violence and on the issue of trauma. So if I were to, you know, do this exercise, how would you psychoanalyze the traumatization of this age? You know, if you took society as a whole, I don't know if this is something that you've been thinking about, but there are many traumas that we have. Some of them are important, some of them are maybe a little ridiculous, but what would you say about the traumas of our society, which sometimes come in this aggressive, sort of singularities, if I may?
Well, first of all, I need to correct you. I'm not a psychoanalyst. I have a great interest in psychoanalysis, but in recent years I have worked less on psychoanalysis. Nonetheless, it's true that I'm very interested in the question of trauma, and I was asked to provide an illustration or something that would somehow relate to my current work. So I chose this illustration by an anonymous group of artists, of American artists, and perhaps you can not really see it, but what this collective did, its name is Forkscrew Graphics. They used the famous advertisement of the iPad, or the iPod rather. And instead of having a dancing figure attached to the iPod, they put the image that is probably the icon of American torture practices in the place of the dancing person. And I thought this illustration would actually relate well to to this conference, because the illustration is powerful insofar as, on the one hand, I think what it communicates to us is, no matter how strongly we are connected to contemporary media and the contemporary apparatus of indoctrination, there is a way we can still be reached by something like this, because it produces a certain shock. You know, even
electric shock, I can see also.
Well,
isn't he holding electric rods?
Well, it's the iconic image of what happened in Abu Ghraib, where prisoners were forced to stand on a box. They were hooded. It's called sensory deprivation. And the wires that you perhaps cannot see from the audience, that was actually done in Abu Ghraib. You certainly recall what happened in Abu Ghraib, namely, prisoners were forced to stand. So it's a so-called no-touch torture. They were forced to stand on a box for hours. And the danger of electrocution was simulated with the attachment of electrical wires to their hands, just like in this image. And this is the democratic form of torture, namely no-touch torture, so-called torture light, i.e. psychological torture, which is particularly perverse because in this case, the victim imposes the pain on himself. And I say himself because, as you know, what happens in Guantanamo and in Abu Ghraib, it's all Muslim men. So the torture victim imposes the pain of hour-long standing on himself. It leads to terrible pain in the hips, kidney failure, terrible pain in the legs, swelling of the legs, and so on. But this particular torture paradigm in which the hood indicates sensory deprivation. Sensory deprivation is a massive form of torture. But it's not a new torture paradigm. It was actually used in the 20th century by three other countries. And it's known as the Vietnam, which I think here we could come in with psychoanalysis.
Yes, okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. I mean, why do we do this to ourselves? I mean, this is, of course, something that pains everybody here. Do you think that, you know, on one hand, I've never heard of a philosopher who would actually agree with torture. None of us agrees with torture, yet we do it. As a society, mm-hmm. we do it. This is the West. You call it democratic, you know, form of torture. But also after September 11th, which this is sort of an echo of it, there was even this hatred that you could even feel on the very streets of New York. You know, people wouldn't buy kebabs, you know, for a couple of days. Even French wine was sort of, and it became, you know, freedom fries instead right. of French fries. So there was this sort of hatred, this sort of punishment that we wanted to inflict as the West. So how would you explain that? Is that us, again, you know, you quote Derrida a lot, or maybe I could come with Hannah Arendt in it, and is this banality of evil that nobody really wants to do this, or John Paul II calls it the sinful structure. Everybody here, nobody wants to do torture, but then again, at the end of the day, we somehow do it.
The problem really is usually democratic societies think of themselves as precisely not performing torture. However, there is a strongly increased acceptability of torture that can be observed, for example, in the enormous popularity of TV series in the United States, such as 24.
Yeah, okay, but that's sort of castrated violence in a way, or virtual, you know, it's not real, it's still
it's too simple to say it's not real, because actually the producers of 24 a series of high-ranking security agents and Secret Service agents paid a visit to the producers of 24 several years ago to ask them to tone down the torture scenes in their film, because the films produced a certain effect in the American soldiers serving in Iraq, in Guantanamo, in Abu Ghraib, because they actually thought that what they saw in that TV series would work. So there is a huge popularity of torture. I mean, yeah, we don't agree with it, but it seems to have an enormous entertainment value.
Yeah, okay, so we have, you know, horror movies, we have even in, you know, regular movies, there's you know, these artificial, in a way, pain. Is there a residual of violence that we have in us that needs to be fulfilled either in real or at least in fictionary manner? And you would be critical towards these aggressive, because a lot of people also say that this is our scapegoat of letting the violence go through the horrors and through, you know, fictional violence.
I just think that fictional violence, you need to know that it has effects. It's, you know, there's this notion of the fact-fiction continuum, which I think is a problematic notion. We certainly react to the world around us in fiction making, but at the same time, the media production of torture has concrete effects on, let's say, the troops on the ground. And I'm just not competent to speak about the potential of violence in all of us. Certainly it is, but I need to add that Western democracies always basically have the ambition to teach other countries of human rights. So I think as citizens of democratic countries, and I should add as taxpayers, I pay my income taxes in the United States. So I'm actually financially contributing to these abuses.
Yeah. Do you think this will be the end of torture, Abu Ghraib? It's been so strongly in the media. Everybody was sort of sorry. Nobody wanted to admit
this. No, on the contrary. On the contrary. Torture is more acceptable than ever since the most powerful country in the world has lost credit, if I may say, credibility in defending human rights.
Yeah, but next time they'll be more careful, because even in sort of a secrecy of Abu Ghraib and other, you know, detached prisons, no press, yet it leaked. It was the army that did it, you know, mm-hmm. themselves. Yet it leaked. Everybody will be much more careful about this next time.
Perhaps, but I should perhaps say there is Guantanamo. And Guantanamo Bay prison camp contains still more than 160 prisoners who have never been officially charged. The large majority of them have never been officially charged. So the principle of habeas corpus, the right to know the reason of one's imprisonment, you know, it's a fiction there. So some of them have been in that place for 10 years of their lives, not knowing, not never having heard official accusations that justify their imprisonment. And that, you know, it's probable that there is no torture in Guantanamo, although solitary confinement is considered in international law, at least in some forms, as a form of torture too. And that definitely is happening too. And a lot of people find it acceptable, certainly the American public.
They really find it acceptable?
Well, they probably out of a certain despair, yeah? And out of...
But this torture, I thought, wasn't used as an interrogation method. It was just sort of, I'm sorry for the word, for fun of the entertainment of the soldiers. No, it wasn't a vehicle for getting information out of this.
Well, there's a slippery slope, as the specialists on torture all will confirm. There's a slippery slope. And what is called, in the language of the specialists, force drift. So if one method doesn't bring the desired results, we turn up the severity of...
But are we more or less violent or equally violent than in the past? Because, you know, before torture was quite normal. If you know, a foreign, in let's say 200 years ago, we did public tortures on the squares. This day, at least, and I know I don't want this to sound cynical, but at least we try to hide it. At least we are ashamed of it. But, you know, 200, 300 years ago, it was the public fun. We tortured animals just for fun. Today, you know, if you kill one horse riding and shooting the Hobbit, you're losing all your popularity. So how would you mm-hmm. assess this on a timeline of, let's say, development of the Western tolerance or Western approach to torture? Is it improving at least?
I cannot answer that question, but I would say the methods probably are becoming more sophisticated, meaning the CIA poured millions of dollars into a paradigm that very finely developed the so-called psychological torture, which, according to clinicians, is more devastating than physical torture. Because, for example, a paradigm that was developed with lots of American taxpayers' money after World War II was a form of torture that basically consists in pure isolation. So the hood, sensory deprivation on all levels, and so complete silence, complete sensory deprivation of all the senses. And that led within 48 hours to a state of psychosis. So nowadays, I also think that with the military technology of the drones, again, methods have become more sophisticated. It's hard to say what.
So why do we torture? I mean, if there is a prisoner that cannot help himself, why do we have this in us? Why do the soldiers do it? I mean, and there's been research that normal people, university educated, you know, the Yale experiment, do it as well. You know,
it's an important question that you ask, but one needs to keep in mind, this is not some crazy U.S. soldiers, as it was presented, right. You know, some hillbillies who, because they are frustrated, started. Yeah. It was an order given from above. Yeah. That is extremely it's extremely important to keep in mind. And it's an order given from above that then, in the end, resulted in the punishment of the people below. But not, I mean, Obama, for example, made it impossible to prosecute any of the authors of the torture memos that recently celebrated their 10th anniversary, right? So the torture memos were, it's really, and here we can come to Freud, really, to psychoanalysis. Freud wrote an extremely fascinating text on World War I, during World War I, in which he asked, how is it possible that civilized nations such as France and Germany can resort to methods whose cruelty are incomprehensible? Yeah, well, and his answer is, if it is permitted on the top, it trickles down. I mean, I'm really grossly simplifying things here. But it is the trickle-down effect that really Abu Ghraib is a result.
This is a nice point that, you know, Zygmunt Bauman also makes in Modernity and Holocaust. He says, you know, it's mm-hmm. not the oops of modernity, the Holocaust, the machine of death, but it was, Bauman argues, it was a direct consequence of a modern, rational age deprived of fellow sympathy. It was a consequence, and this is I think where Hannah Arendt comes in mm-hmm. with Eichmann trial in Jerusalem, saying that, you know, Eichmann himself wasn't a crazy maniac like these soldiers, and not, this is exactly your point, but he was an average man who was very banal and just did what people told him to do because this was sort of the way this, I would call it the sin of rationality. It's not mm-hmm. even a sin of emotion, but a sin of rationality, deprived of emotions.
I mean, what we saw this morning, if you were here, the soldier, the Iraqi veteran, a very moving photo, an Iraqi veteran, I mean a veteran, American, U.S. soldier, a veteran from Iraq, kissing very tenderly his newborn baby. And the perturbing possibility of interpretation we heard was that if that soldier knows that he did what he did for his newborn child, it would be giving meaning. I call it emotional blackmail. That's emotional blackmail. And of course, we're all susceptible to it. If our children are on the line, right? You know, the limbic brain, as we heard this morning from Hunter Beaumont, you know, it is extremely difficult to resist that. Mm. And that is, of course, the rationale that is given over, and Hunter Beaumont this morning mentioned that also. This is the message that is made over and over, said over and over again. If we do not torture, they will blow us up. I mean, they will blow up your children. They will, you know, something bad will happen. And that is a rhetoric that was very much active.
So it's emotional torture also, in a way, of the rest. Unfortunately, we ended up in a very dreary subject, which was sort of to be expected with the topic, but I thank you very much, and let's the next one.